You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 618, Album Battle. And here we are. Actually, I didn't play any intro music there because we'll be playing a lot of songs today. So there's probably like a second gap there. But that's okay because it's the pause before the storm because it's Album Battle. Sam Barrett's back, ready to hack off heads, cause bloodshed, and beat in some brains with her album. That will take on the other two albums of tonight. The way who will be king of the albums or queen of the albums? Which album will reign supreme, and which albums will be beaten down into their component songs, compositions, and sound recordings, and smashed into pieces? Sam Barrett, will your album reign supreme on tonight's album battle?
I'm not sure. It's really like out there.
Well, Sam Barrett's album is obscure. I had never even heard of the band before, and we're going to talk about that. And, of course, this is probably, you know, the album battle is where we each play, we each talk about an album that we love or an album we find is interesting, and play three songs, one in the front and two in the back. And we each just talk about the album, and we see what the others think of the album. But also, coming to the album battle, and more from the frozen Canadian tundra, where the weak die and the strong survive, where the ice and rain beat down on their clay huts, but it doesn't matter because their very skin and blood is made of ice, and to them, ice showers is like a fresh spring rain. The frozen north, the brutal, hostile environment, which yields only the strongest of the human race, and more.
Are you ready
for tonight's war?
I have come prepared to do battle, and I will take the crown, or trophy, or praise, the prize. Yeah.
$10 gift card to Dunkin'. That's what's important. That's what you're gonna get.
We don't have a Dunkin' up here.
No, it's important.
$10. Even better, this year we've upgraded $10 gift card to Red Lobster.
Biscuits!
Yay!
And so we are going to decide what order people go in by rolling. In the album battle, we are going to roll the dice of destiny. And if I roll one or two, I will go. If I roll three or four, Sam Barrett will go. And if I roll five or six, then M. Moore will go. And now we shall roll the dice of destiny. M. Moore, five. You get first strike in album battle. M. Moore, what song will you lead with your battle cry?
I'm leading with Party Poison.
This is Party Poison by My Chemical Romance.
With a capital T, so get your hands up, now get your hands up, hide your eyes again.
we're back. I introduced kind of like Casey Kasem in the middle of the album battle. And more, tell me about My Chemical Romance and the album that you have chosen for album battle.
I forgot to introduce it at the beginning. Yep. So I just realized that I picked My Chemical Romance's Danger Days, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys. This was released in 2010. This is their last studio LP, and it is their most divisive album. You either love it or you hate it. There's no sitting on the fence. This is one side or the other. I know people who absolutely love MCR and hate this album. And I know people who this is the album that like got them into MCR and they love this album. I love this album. I think it's awesome. I also think this is one of their punkest albums, if not their the punkest album that My Chemical Romance has ever released, because this is a concept album, and I'll get into the concept in a minute. But one thing that's very important to this album is bright colors and like really like kind of almost like electronic, very futuristic like sounds. And this album followed the Black Parade. And the Black Parade is a very heavy album. There's a lot of gray, there's a lot of black, there's a lot of like monochromatic colors. It's very intense. And then to follow that up with, fuck you, we're not going to make something like that. We're doing like dystopian desert, like fun time kind of thing. It's not, but like, you know, like they're switching it up and being like, you're not going to put us in a box. We're going to do something completely different. So that's why I think this album is one of their punkest albums, if not their punkest album. So just to get into the concept a little bit. So the album takes place in Battery City, which is a desert in a dystopian future. It's in California, and their dystopian future takes place in 2019. So I forgot the year that they said, so that was just kind of fun. So it centers around the Killjoys, who are the band, and later on their fans, who are fighting against Better Living Industries, which is an evil corporation that is brainwashing people and making them like take pills to suppress their emotions, kind of like The Giver, but a lot better. And they're also just evil in general. So they like send agents like to get all the dissenters because they want everyone to be all good and all that kind of stuff. So the personas for the band, their Killjoy personas are Gerard Way is Party Poison, Frank Iero is Fun Ghoul, Ray Toro is Jetstar, and Mikey Way is Cobra Kid. So I'm not spoiling the album because in Save Yourself, I'll Hold Them Back, there's a line that's I'll Tell You How the Story Ends, where the good guys die and the bad guys win, and that's what happens. The evil corporation kills the Killjoys, but in doing so, they're passing along the torch to, like, the fans and the rest of the people who would be classified as Killjoys. So you can create your own, like, ID, where you can make your like, your name and, like, your color scheme and all that kind of stuff, which is really cool. So that's, and there's so many references, like, within the album, too. Like, what is it? In Party Poison, there's a reference to Jawbreaker. One of the lyrics, there's, like, references to, like, MC5 and all sorts of stuff. And, of course, the last song, Vampire Money, has to do with them being asked to do something with the Twilight soundtrack. And they're like, nope. So that's kind of, if they made a sellout song, that's kind of what it was. And, again, there's lots of references to that. Like, the Volvo car in the movies, the main vampire guy drives one of those. So that's really cool, too. And also, just a complete aside, Twilight is loosely based on Gerard Way. So anyway, the album itself is super high energy for the most part and goes with the concept. So it opens with Look Alive Sunshine, which is a radio broadcast from the pirate radio station, controlled by Dr. Destifying, who is on the side of the Killjoys. So throughout the album, there are three radio transmissions. There's Look Alive Sunshine, which starts off the album. There's Jetstar and the Cobra Kid Traffic Report, and then there's Goodnight Dr. Death. So those in and of themselves kind of tell the story too, and they work really well with the transitions between, like, okay, at the beginning it's here we are, like, you gotta keep going kind of thing, and just how seamlessly Look Alive Sunshine transitions into Na 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 is just like chef's kiss of chef's kiss. The transitions in this album are just perfect. Like, you have to listen to it from start to finish. You can't skip anything, and it's just absolutely wonderful. There are like slower songs like Bulletproof Heart, and I guess you could classify Scarecrow as kind of like a slower song. But they add to the feeling of the album. When you really listen to the lyrics, you get the concept. And that's the other thing. Like, it's not just, if you don't know the concept, you can still really enjoy the album because, like, everyone can relate to it. It's like, okay, like, I'm outnumbered, but you know what? I'm just going to, like, fight through it. I'm going to blast through it. It doesn't matter what happens. I'm pushing through. And it's just like, that's the theme. You never stop, you keep going. And just a cool tie-in, in 2013, Gerard Way wrote a comic book with Sean Simon, and it was drawn by Becky Cloonan, called The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys. It's set a couple years after the events of Danger Days, and it follows the girl. So if you watch the videos for if you watch the video for Na 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 and Sing, you'd see the Killjoys fighting blind to save a girl who is unnamed. She's just called the girl. And this comic book picks up where the girl is after the original Killjoys saved her life. And it's very good, and it gets more into like the mythology, like who Destroya is and all this kind of stuff. Like, there's androids, there's all sorts of really cool stuff, which again is in the album, but with the comic book gives it a little bit more context. If you read the comic book while listening to the album, it syncs up pretty perfect too, which is really cool. And yeah, it's just, it's awesome because there's so much going on. The music is great. Like, you can dance to it. You can just like have a good time, even though, again, the lyrics aren't necessarily the happiest. This was one of the first albums that really got me into MCR. And it's one of those that I return to like pretty much all the time. I listen to it at least once a month in full, and then obviously like scattered songs here or there. So I'm really interested to hear what you guys thought of Danger Days.
I'm not a MyChem fan, but I didn't feel anything, nor did I hate it. Yeah, maybe I fit in that weird Venn diagram of weird humans. But it so, like, when you mentioned the song and I started listening to it, I was like, what the hell is going on? There's a lot going on here.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, there's rap intros. There's a lot of, like, you know, words that, like, you know, like, almost like snippets from, like, a movie and things like that. So it didn't, like, occur to me that this was a concept album right away. I just thought it was freaking weird. It actually took me going into Wikipedia to read, like, exactly what this was and be like, oh, so this is like an art project that someone had, you know. I was like, and it started to make sense because I'm like, you know, as I'm listening to it, like in between the songs, you know, there's like intros and outros, and, you know, it does seem like almost like one cohesive, like almost like soundtrack to something. So I started watching the videos, and the videos are beautifully shot. There's so many props. Jeez. I think this was around the time where like the music video bubble was happening. So everything had was thrown money in space places, or at least the tail end of it. So that all makes sense to me. Like, you know, they're like the two videos, Na 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 and what is the other one?
Sing.
I was like, they work so well together.
Yeah.
Like back to back. Like if you watch it back to back, it kind of all makes sense. And it almost seems like it does tell the story of this album, you know? So I do appreciate that. I think there was a video for Planetary.
It's a lot. Yeah. Live footage.
Yeah. Which I was kind of like, I kind of wish they did something like related to the other two.
Yeah.
I did like that song because it was super dancey. Like, you know, I could totally see that at a rave. I think the video was like shot almost like everyone was dancing anyways. So it's all good. I'm trying to figure out what the Japanese stuff has to do with it.
So, there's Gerard Way did an interview about that, and he wanted it to sound futuristic, so he thought Japanese would make it sound like it's in the future somehow.
Huh. Okay. Yeah.
I think because, like, what's the movie that has, like, all of the, like, neon signs?
Blade Runner?
Yeah.
Blade Runner.
I think it was like that. That one.
I think you hit a nerve with John.
I haven't seen it. I've just seen, like, pictures.
You haven't seen Blade Runner?
I haven't seen it. No.
John, she is very young compared to me and you, so cut her some slack.
I do want to see it. I just haven't seen it.
Well, you're not trying hard enough, Em. You're not trying hard enough to see Blade Runner.
I'll rent it the next time I see it.
So I do really like the fact that there is a comic that followed this. Like, I did feel like there is a story here, and I might actually check out this comic just to see what happens.
It's really good.
Yeah, I've been reading comics lately, so, you know, it's a thing. I'll update you, Em, whenever I do get this comic, whether or not I like it or not. So, to be continued.
Sam, what comics have you been reading?
I've been reading, there's a comic called American Born Chinese. So, like, that author I've just been kind of, like, diving into, like, his other stuff.
Oh, so you mean Gene Yang, you mean?
Yeah, him. He's great.
I just Googled that.
yeah. So he has a comic about the Boxer Rebellion, so I've kind of been trying to finish that. I started it, like, a long time ago, so we're working on that.
Fair enough. Well, you know, I don't know a whole lot about My Chemical Romance, and I thought I was going to hate this album, and actually I didn't hate it, and I actually kind of liked it.
Yeah!
I I was intrigued by. I was intrigued that it's kind of like Queenish, and that, you know, there's a lot of really big, broad, like theatrical, almost Tim Burton-esque type things. But also, it's kind of World Inferno-ish when there's kind of a whole lot of like soul, I guess, parts. But also, to me, it really just kept coming back that it was a lot of pop records, but also a lot of 80s thing. Sam, did you get? I bet this Ed Moore didn't even get this. Did you get the part where he's like quoting EMFs? You're unbelievable.
Oh yeah. There was snippets of like a lot of like mainstream like pop culture thingies in it that I was like, oh, like I forgot what like I heard, but I heard some like it's like dance something, like some like, you know, whatever track in there, kind of like embedded in as like a background sound somewhere. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know where this is going, but okay.
I actually liked how he kind of weaved in stuff from throughout pop history and without specifically giving credit to it, which I think is interesting. Like Sublime did that a lot, and also like the Blues Guys have done it forever, and of course Led Zeppelin did it from the Blues Guys, just kind of weaving something and making it such like it stands out, but it's such a part of the cultural consciousness in that like it just fits in cleverly. So I thought that was kind of cool. It's a long album and there's a lot to it. I like how there is a bunch of like radio dispatches or whatever, and apparently the guy doing radio dispatches is the guy from Mindless Self-Indulgence. The funny thing is when he was talking, like I thought it was Sleazy P. Martini from GWAR because he sounds a lot like Sleazy P. D. Martini from GWAR. I'm like, did they Sleazy P. Martini all this time? But it wasn't. It was I wonder if Steve Montana was emulating Sleazy P. Martini because he was doing that faux Jersey City accent, you know. So I thought that was kind of interesting. There's a lot of production on this and a lot of pop and a lot of like synthesized drums and stuff. I wonder I dug the album. I thought the album was kind of cool and clever, and I get why people like My Chemical Romance, because they're big, they're broad, they're fun, they swing for it, and it's not, I mean, there's a large level of cleverness, I guess, self-referential reflections on themselves, but also they're kind of in on the joke or the procession. It's like, yeah, it is over the top. Yeah, it is kind of funny. And a lot like World Inferno, frankly. So I dug that. My criticism would be is I hate how everything is brick-walled and way, 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 way overproduced. I almost wonder what this record would sound like if it was produced by who produced like Queen's albums? Like I almost wonder if they almost gave a kind of that live studio sound. I'm gonna pull the name of the guy that produced Queen. I think he produced Judas Priest too. I know he did. He's a very famous producer. Let's see here. Roy Thomas Baker. So like I wonder if like Roy Thomas Baker produced this record, what would it sound like? So I actually thought it was kind of cool. I thought it was kind of cool. Just for me, there's a lot of production on that, and I wonder if they kind of took out all the computerized production and kind of made it sound more like a rock record. But I thought it was kind of cool. So yeah.
I think they made it so like produced for that like futuristic kind of vibe.
It also kind of reminded me of Sam. Are you a Janelle Monáe fan?
I do appreciate her.
It reminded me of Janelle Monáe's Electric Lady in that it's futuristic. It's very produced. There's like radio dispatches. I love Janelle Monáe's Electric Lady. I love that record. Anyway, Em, do you have any closing words? You want to play a couple of tracks or what do you want to do? Also, Roy Thomas Baker did not produce Judas Priest. He did he did produce Ian Hunter, Queen, Journey, The Cars, Alice Cooper, Foreigner, Cheap Trick, Devo, Motley Crue, Ozzy, The Stranglers, John Anderson, The Smashing Pumpkins, The Transformers, but never Judas Priest. Hawkwind, but never Judas Priest. So anyway, Em, take it away.
Yeah, so...
Arnold Korns, of course, Sam Barrett. You know who Arnold Korns is, don't you?
No.
That's David Bowie under his fake name. Anyway, go ahead, Em Moore.
Danger Days, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys by My Chemical Romance is their punkest release, one of the most exciting albums to come out in the 2000s, like by far. And Yeah, it just rocks. If you think you don't like My Chemical Romance, try this. Because you're overlooking a lot of really, really cool shit by just saying, ah, screw that band kind of thing. So yeah, I'm going to send them off with Save Yourself, I'll Hold Them Back, which is one of my favorite My Chemical Romance songs, and Destroya, so you get to hear Gerard Way moan.
Thank you.
And that was My Chemical Romance, and now it's down to me and Sam. And now we will roll the dice of destiny. Sam, I will be 1-3. You will be 4-6. And we will see who goes next on Album Battle. Oops, I dropped my dice. 3, I'm next. And this is Inner City Unit covering Hawkwind, doing Master of the Universe. Let's rock. We'll be right back. we're back. And I know I talk about Hawkwind all the time. I actually used to talk about Hawkwind. So, like, I love Hawkwind a lot. Of course, if the listeners don't know, Hawkwind is one of the first space rock bands. They formed in England in, like, 1968 or maybe, like, 1965 in a proto form. Hawkwind and Pink Floyd and the Pink Fairies were kind of the three first space rock bands. And they all kind of were, like, pals and changed members very early on and then went off in their own direction. I chose Inner City Unit, which is – well, okay, so one of the main Hawkwind guys was Nick Turner. Nick Turner played saxophone and sang in Hawkwind. And the other main Hawkwind guy is oh, my God, I can't remember his name. Well, I can't remember the name of the guy, the other main Hawkwind guy. That's embarrassing. Damn. I can't remember that guy's name. Damn. What's the other name? Man, it's embarrassing. Dave Brock, of course. Dave Brock. Dave Brock is the other main guy in Hawkwind. And Nick Turner and Dave Brock really did not get along after the early days. And Nick Turner split off from Hawkwind. The first thing that he did is he went to Egypt and he formed a band called Sphinx. Actually, he formed a band called Sphinx and basically put out a solo record. And then he went to Egypt and he snuck into the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is Khufu's pyramid. And he recorded a 15-minute flute solo in the Great Pyramid and released that. Afterwards, he came back to England and he wanted to get something together. So he did like a charity single, which was against nuclear proliferation. And of course, and more. Who sang on Nick Turner's Nuclear Waste 7-inch single?
I don't know.
Sting of the Police before he was famous.
Oh, cool.
So, and I think there's a couple of other cool people, like maybe Lemmy or something is on that. So he formed that. From that, he got the idea to form his next band. Nick Turner was influenced by the new wave and punk scenes. So he formed, so what Nuclear Waste is, let's see here. It's Nick Turner, Sting, Steve Hillage, who's going to be in the Inner City Unit, and a couple other people that maybe aren't quite as noteworthy. So anyways, so punk rock is coming around, new wave's coming around. So Nick Turner, instead of kind of doing the Hawkwind thing and just keeping doing the Hawkwind thing forever, he decides to kind of update his sound, and he forms Inner City Unit. The other main guy in Inner City Unit is Trev Thomas, who used to be in Steve Peregrine Took's horns. And of course, Sam Barrett, who is Steve Peregrine Took?
Don't know. Why don't you tell me?
Steve Peregrine Took is, he was one of the original members of T-Rex. And of course, Emmore, who's T-Rex?
Ooh, Mark Bolan.
That's right. Bang a gong, get it on. So anyway, Nick Turner and they call him Judge Trev. Trev Thomas form Inner City Unit. Inner City Unit releases their first album. It's probably their best, but all their albums are pretty good. It's called Pass Out, and it's a super cool, super interesting album. They basically take Hawkwind, punk, and new wave and kind of mix together into like this singular entity. And for me, what's really cool is they actually re-record two Hawkwind numbers, and it's funny, it's punk rock, it's freaky, it's fun. One of the main songs on it is a song called Solitary Ashtray, which we talked about on a previous episode. It's actually about a German terrorist, and basically it's Nick Turner saying don't do German terrorism, but they couldn't call it Solitary Ashtray because they were afraid it would get banned in Germany, so they called it Solitary Ashtray so they could get it distributed in Germany. The two Hawkwind covers, they do a version of Master of the Universe, which is probably Hawkwind's big jam, or certainly one of their big jams. They also do Brainstorm. Also, Nick Turner kind of writes some songs that he would keep playing even after the end of Inner City Unit, specifically Watching the Grass Grow and Space Invaders and maybe even Polyethylene. I would say the record is a pretty brief. It's chaotic. I think the best part is that he blends together punk, new wave. There's ska in it, but also, like I said, there's some songs that are political, like songs like Fallout and Nuclear Waste are about, you know, how nuclear warfare is bad and maybe nuclear energy is bad. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, but I like that Nick Turner is against it. So I like how it's very political in some parts. It's very spacey in some parts. Songs like Space Invaders are kind of, you know, looking at aliens and Martians from kind of like a 50s pulp perspective, but also from a truly exterior looking at the universe thing. So one of the things that really there's very few bands that do this these days is Inner City Unit is both serious and funny and political. A lot of political bands, really even starting in the 80s, is if you're political, you can't be funny. Whereas Nick Turner and Inner City Unit are funny a lot, but they're also very political sometimes. They're also very serious, but they also kind of wink at themselves and just do fun things for being fun. And so I think one of the main things about Inner City Unit is that it does rock, it does kick ass, but it is still fun. A lot of bands, I mean, there are some bands that are mixing fun and politics, who's that band down in Georgia that I like a lot that M. Moore likes? Let's see, Grand. They're funny, yeah, but they're political. So I think some bands are kind of bringing that back, but I think Inner City Unit really, really mastered it. I wrote some notes here, and I can't read a single one. How do you like that? So I guess what was interesting is, whereas Hawkwind and Dave Brock kept kind of doing the same thing over and over and over, Nick Turner kind of went in the other direction, let's do something new and kind of stay hip. I think Inner City Unit isn't that well known, but they're well known enough to be kind of highly regarded and saying maybe, I mean, I almost like Inner City Unit better than Hawkwind just because it is punker, harder, freakier, and far out. There's four Inner City Unit albums total. And they're all real good. I just think the first one is kind of a weird encapsulation. And actually, we do see this from time to time. Bands and artists from before punk attempting to do punk. And sometimes they hit and sometimes they suck. Another good example would be, you can do anything you want to do. Life on the Line. Who is that? Oh, crap. My memory's so bad. Any of the Hot Rods. So he's from before punk, and he kind of took punk on and did kind of a cool version of it. You know, Nick Turner did another cool version of it, and I think it just goes to show how punk rock kind of stretches back before we might think it comes from. It also shows that all the English punkers were heavily influenced by Hawkwind. Sex Pistols, especially Johnny Rotten, love Hawkwind. I'm trying to think, and Pink Fairies. Jello Biafra, I realize he's not English, but he loves punk Hawkwind. And Pink Fairies and all those bands. And so it's kind of cool to see the guys from Crass, like Steve Ignorant loves Hawkwind. So it's kind of cool to see the guys from before punk kind of grasp punk, successfully do it, and the punkers dig it. And Inner City Unit actually played gigs with a lot of punk bands because they're basically a punk band. So I think they're real cool. And more, what did you think of Inner City Unit?
I thought it was really cool. When we talked about the Solitary Ashtray song on a couple podcasts ago, I really liked that song. I thought it was cool, so I was looking forward to listening to this, and it was not what I was expecting. It was like weirder. There was just like so much going on, but it was awesome. Like, there's robots and the future and aliens and like disarmament, like it's just great. Like, I really liked the Brainstorm cover. I thought that was just like nuts. Cars Eat with Autoface was really cool. Nuclear Waste, like Space Invaders. Amyl Nitrate was surprising because it was like kind of at that point I was like, okay, I think I kind of know what to expect, and then that starts, I'm like, ah, ska, I wasn't expecting this. Like, it was just really, really cool. So I enjoyed it a lot. It's like you said, it's a good mix of fun and funny and like serious, and I think they did it really, really well. So I want to check out more by them, but I really, really enjoyed this.
The one to check out after this, it's actually probably the compilation album, because that actually has the first four tracks they recorded, including a different version of Cars Eat with Autoface, which is like super heavy. It is almost like Flipper before Flipper, or like you know, Black Sabbath side one before Black Sabbath side one. So you might want to check out, the album is called, it's like they've got, unfortunately, kind of a confused, oh, Punkadelic. It's a compilation, but it's got some really cool tracks on it, so that's probably the one to check out after this. And then afterwards, President's Tape, maybe. They're all actually pretty good albums, but I definitely think Pass Out is the best. Sammy B, what did you think I'm interested to see what you think. I'm going to get, should I guess your take, or do you just want to give your take?
You can guess my initial take, yeah.
Thumbs down. That's my guess on the take.
You're very good. Yes, very good. So this is not my jam. It kind of reminded me of, like, things I would hear at a record shop crate digging. if the person that owned the shop or was in the front of the shop was, like, pretty old. I think it was weird. I think it was psychedelic. Psychedelic things are not really my thing. Also, surfy things, also not my thing unless I'm at, like, a beach and, you know, I'm hanging out. I did find this also very long.
It's like 30 minutes long, Sam.
Yeah, that's like... I don't know, like, I was listening it to today, like, twice, and I was like, why is this so long? I was just sitting there going, I don't know. I'm not shocked you picked this, only because of Hawkwind. As soon as I found out that this guy has, like, something to do with Hawkwind, I was like, oh, yes, John. Yeah, so that's my hot take on that. So I'm sorry. We're not sorry.
Em loves it. Sam hates it. We'll let the listeners decide. I think everyone should check out Inner City Unit. I love pretty much everything Nick Turner did. I especially love Inner City Unit. It's probably, like I said, I might like it more than Hawkwind. I love Inner City Unit. We will listen to Solitary Ashtray and then Watching the Grass Grow. And then we'll be back for Sam's album Battle Choice. Let's go.
the eternal survivors. Androgynous energies traveling through time.
Track, and then we'll talk about your album.
Okay, so I have a story with this, but I am going to play a band that a lot of people probably have no idea who they are.
I did.
They're called Clearview 77, and I am going to play Absent Company.
Trainer on the phone, wanna be the guy. my life.
And we're back. Sam, tell us about Clearview 77.
Yeah, so I think everyone and their mothers probably can figure out through my accent and or the fact that I talk about Brooklyn too much that I'm from New York. So Clearview 77 is a band from Brooklyn.
Sam, you think you have a heavy accent? I never thought you had a heavy accent.
Ask my husband.
I think your husband's got a heavier accent than you do.
Oh, no. Pretty much whenever I say dog, you hear
dog.
It.
Dog,
yeah. Draw. water. Yeah, no, I have a pretty New York accent that most people from out of town or when I travel can 100% pick up that I'm not from the area.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So Clearview 77 is from Brooklyn. They literally played maybe up and down the East Coast, maybe. It really isn't much information on the internet about them, only because when they were active, the internet was kind of a thing. Not really. Yeah. So they played a lot and they got quite a bit of accolades from college radio, so CMJ, things like that. They were active, let's say maybe late 90s into the early 2000s. So the reason why I picked this was recently. Yes, I have a story, and I also have the CD out because I was reading it because I need more information to think of. The reason why I picked this was because I was literally having dinner with a friend, and this friend is from this area and literally said, I've been trying to figure out this band from the early 2000s. And he started singing a part of a song. Me and my husband, we started singing the song together, the three of us. And I literally screamed out Clearview 77 because it was etched in the back of my brain because I love this band so much, growing up and getting into punk. The other thing about Clearview 77, which I've mentioned Punk Temple, Brooklyn Punk Temple before. On the podcast, Clearview 77 was one of the staple bands of Punk Temple. They literally played Punk Temple all the time. So it kind of gives me those nostalgic feels when it comes to this band, this album. I actually lost this CD a million years ago. I think it's in the back of a Honda Civic with one of those CD changers that has the six CD changers that you would put in the back of the car. I think my dad sold that car and that CD went with it. So it took me quite a bit of time to find this album again on CD, on Amazon or eBay, a million years later. I think this band is great. I think this band is literally quintessential, late 90s, early 2000s, New York punk. Every band that went, I listened to at that time sounded like this. They're in the same vein as, a band like Up for Nothing, which is still active, again, from Brooklyn. Things like that. I just wish people would listen to it because I think they're really damn great. And there's just something about great bands from your past that sometimes because they're not active anymore just gets buried. And then everyone forgets about. I think that dinner that I had, like, made me realize this about this and other bands that I love. Yeah. So what do you guys think? I'm going to assume maybe not on John's side.
Well, I'll go first. I didn't hate this. I actually thought this was okay. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. What was most interesting for me about this is, you know, people often refer to bands like brand new as pop punk. And I'm like, where's the pop and where's the punk? Like I'm like, this is just garbage, bland rock. I don't know why brand new is called pop punk. When to me, pop punk is either the Ramones or bands that are derivative of the Ramones, or, you know, kind of bouncy, poppy, punkish kind of bands, kind of like, you know, the Muffs, or I mean, basically bands influenced by the Ramones, honestly. You know, that's pop. To me, that is what pop punk is. And what's interesting about this record is I actually kind of felt this was the missing link between what I think of as pop punk and what is now often referred to as pop punk, you know, because there definitely is that kind of Ramones bounce, but it is kind of hidden sort of behind, I guess, more melodic or more open heart, you know, type singing and stuff. So I thought this was kind of a real interesting missing connection in the annals of punk rock history. So I thought it was kind of cool. But I do have to question any band that would willingly cover U2 that is not a piss take. Like U2, you know. But I didn't hate it. I thought it was kind of good. I thought it was kind of pop, kind of punky. It's a bit more on the feelings edge than I like, but I thought it was well done for what it was and more. What do you think?
Yeah, well, like, I'd never heard of this band before. When I went to, like, Google it, there, like, nothing came back. So it's like, what is going on? So
obscure.
Yeah, it was just really, really surprising, right? Because, like, you can look up anything and it's like, you'll find, like, 50 things. So that was just really kind of fun, and, like, how it's still, like, underground, I guess, after, like, all this time. So, yeah, like, thanks for recommending it, Sam, because I wouldn't have listened to it, like, otherwise. So, yeah, like, I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was pretty good. I liked the guitar work. Like, there's some, like, really, like, good choruses. I really liked Cynical and Christian Radio. And I thought the With or Without You cover was good. I liked it. Because it started, and I was like, no, this isn't. This is not the song. And then it gets to the chorus, and I'm like, holy shit, this is the song. So it was just really, it took me by surprise, so I thought it was kind of funny. But again, like, I thought the cover was good. And yeah, like, with the lyrics, it did get a little more, like, emotive, which I think, again, like, is really, when it's done well and you can tell it's done authentically, I really enjoy that. So, like, that did definitely come through, like, the everything just worked together, like, it melded together really well. So I did enjoy this.
I don't think anyone gets to complain about emotiveness if she listens to My Chemical Romance.
I said it was good.
Emo.
I like the emotiveness.
All of the emotiveness. Like, I do, yes, it is weird you would pick U2, right? But I guess, like, U2 is a thing then, right? Because there was a lot of U2 things happening around then, including, like, what, wasn't there, like, a U2 Apple campaign? Like, but, like, I do think that, like, even though they covered U2, it was done well. Like, it didn't sound exactly like U2. It was, like, you know, I guess a grittier version of U2. I do also like that the back end of the album, so, like, tracks 12 to 14, so it would be Another Story, Dead and Chump, and Friday Night, was actually produced by Roger from Agnostic Front. Which cool. is a very New York thing to do. You know, like, get all of these people from New York to, like, in hardcore bands to, like, you know, produce your stuff.
Sam, you're right, and that is a very New York thing, is you are not a hardcore band, and then you have, like, a hardcore guy produce your record. That is a very, like, late 90s, early 2000s, like New York punk thing.
Exactly. Like, it's kind of like, it's, and you would never think that Roger would do, like, you know, produce music like this, because he's like known for, you know, agnostic front and hardcore and stuff. But I, you know, it just sounds like that's just how things go in New York. You know, you just do whatever. But yeah, no, this album gives me so many feels. I am very, very glad that someone reminded me that they existed, because I've literally been listening to it for about a month now again, like here and there. And I'm glad you guys don't hate it. So we'll see what happens with the listeners.
The thing with you two is Sam is not alone in the wilderness, and that a lot of punk bands and punkish guys actually love you too. I can't tell you, like, Ignite, like, Zoli Tegelas of Ignite loves you too. Mm-hmm. But yep. Also, like, I remember I was talking to Jello Biafra once, and actually we're going to tie this together. Is he's like, yeah, when I was out in London, I think he was out in London, like, before the Dead Kennedys or just after the first record. He's like, I had the opportunity to see Inner City Unit. I'm like, wow. And he's like, and you too before their first album. And I was like, ugh. You know? But he was like psyched about it. So there is like a thing that like some punkers like you too, like before and during the first album, which I can't stand any of them, but a lot of people like it.
Well,
so
I think some punks just like what they like.
Yeah, but they shouldn't like you too. I mean, it's fine to like what you like, but you shouldn't like you too. You know what I'm saying? Sammy B, any closing words for your album selection, and what songs are we going to play?
So I'm going to play Let's Go, Let Go, and Another Story. So yeah.
Let's go!
And we're back, and so wraps up another album battle. Who survived and who died? That's up for the listener to decide. Sammy B, how do you feel after the album battle?
I think M's going to win.
For what reason?
I think we're just going to have to send her a Tim Hortons card. Or no, or the Red Lobster card. She's just going to get, like, you know, 10 bucks of Red Lobster. Maybe that might just be biscuits.
And do you want Red Lobster or Tim Hortons?
Probably Tim Hortons, because there's one closer, but I would take either one.
Do you feel as though you have adequately defended and represented and promulgated MCR upon the Punk News Podcast listening audience?
I hope so. The thing is, every time I talk about them, it's like I have 58 things that I always leave out. Because it's just like, this would be like 2 hours of me just talking.
Well, Em, so I feel like you should just do like a My Chemical Romance series.
I could.
Like, of like shorts.
Ooh,
you know, yeah. You just talking about them like all day long.
I could. That would be really fun.
And then maybe John could do, like, you know, shorts of him getting abducted by the aliens when he was with Tom from Blink.
That's right.
Yes.
You know, aliens hate you, too. I mean, they just can't stand it. At any rate, this has been this episode of Album Battle. Next week, we've got some very interesting letters from some listeners. Also, I think we're going to have Jack Curley from Shimmy Pictures, who did that really cool Crazy in the Brains video, and we got a bunch of cool stuff coming up, and we've got our Christmas episode coming up in a few weeks. And so until then, we will see you next week. Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. Itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Your best to win them all, and one day time will tell. When you're the one left standing there, you reach the final bell. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. Nothing's gonna